0818-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Michelle McGowan is from Lucan in Dublin. Michelle, good afternoon.
Hi.
And congratulations.
No, I don't think so, needed.
And how are you feeling today?
Brilliant, yeah. It's 8 weeks tomorrow since the operation.
And the operation was you gave away.
Yeah.
You donated a kidney.
My kidney, yeah. Because I have two and I didn't need two of them.
And when did you decide you wanted to?
I've been trying to do it for the last few years and contacting the Beaumont Hospital. But we don't do in the South donations to strangers. So eventually last summer they said contact Belfast City Hospital. And that's mm-hmm. what I did. And then the process started and COVID delayed things a bit. But within 8 months of contacting them, I had donated the kidney. So it's terrific.
Well, just explain that to our listeners. In the Republic, you cannot donate a kidney to a stranger who would need it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
You can only donate to friends or family. And so they've been trying to sort it out and get it, that it can be done, because it can be done in the north. But nothing was happening. Each year I rang, they were still hoping it would happen. And so by last year, they said to me, look, I contact Belfast City Hospital. And they're well sorted to do it. And it's a very easy process, very easy operation to go through, but very easy for someone from the south to get up there. Trains and then two more stops and you're outside Belfast City Hospital. It's just, I'm ringing to both get the south to get it together that we can do it, but also to encourage people to think about doing it up in the north, because it really is very easy.
But when you say you can donate in the south to a friend.
Yeah.
So it's not a medical issue. Friend and they go through all the tests.
Yes, of course. I don't know what's stopping this, but it's you can't donate to a stranger.
For a stranger, according to the Irish saying, is a friend that you haven't met yet.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So if you were... No, I'm not being facetious. I think it's incredible what you've done. And we'll go through it in a sec. But I'm not being facetious when I say the law down south is an ass when it comes to kidney donation. Because they're saying if you had found out that Paddy or Mary Morphy needed a kidney, and we know people who need kidneys need them.
Yes,
they need it. If you had said, well, I'd befriend Paddy.
Yes, exactly. It could work that way, because then if you didn't match Paddy, you could be put in a chain.
Now,
and then you could do it that way.
But Michelle, did you wake up one morning or did you and say, I want to give one of my kidneys?
No, I've always donated blood and I've given 50 donations. Then I got osteoporosis and they won't take it then. Even though my osteoporosis had gone down to a different level, you can't do it. So I just thought I've got two kidneys, why not try that? So I can, and I gave it, because it's very easy, to be honest, Joe. When you don't have family, it's easy to make that choice. And I didn't have no children, so it was just a matter of going up and sorting it out. And really, I looked at it as an adventure with hopefully a good outcome at the end of it, that they would accept my kidney.
And they said
yes. They found somebody. Yes. Now, it took a while because it wasn't the best kidney in the world. But by the end, after a couple of months, they were able to say yes, they would be able to find somebody to take it. And within then, of me going on their list at the beginning of February, by the end of February, they told me, yes, we found a match.
I was so
excited. Yeah, it was brilliant.
And no apple, come on, Michelle. You're going under a general anaesthetic.
Yeah.
How long does the operation take?
About 3 hours. And yes, there are risks involved. But thankfully, I was of a good height or good weight. So in good health. They've done a huge amount of tests on me. And I just felt very happy. Really, nothing was going to stop me once I had started the process, because I really wanted to do this. And I was healthy enough and had no other reason not to do it. So, no, I don't think so.
Anyway. Obviously you don't.
Yeah.
But even, I remember I was knocked down 10 years ago and I had to, when I was taking that, blah, 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 and then I was going under surgery and the anaesthetist said to me, you have to sign this or your next of kin has to sign it, because there is a risk when you're getting a general anaesthetic.
Yes, yes. And there's a risk, like, for my future health, if I have to get any medications, I have to tell them that I've only one kidney, and I'm not to get, I'm not to put on weight, because otherwise I could develop diabetes. But anybody, that could happen to anybody. Now, there was a 1 in 3,000 chance I'd die.
Oh, God.
But I didn't tell anyone that till after the operation.
A 1 in 3,000?
Yeah, I think that's a wee bit high, I thought, afterwards.
Did the outsider that won the Kentucky Derby on Friday, I think he had longer odds.
Yeah.
1 in 3,000 that you could die.
I was a bit surprised at that, all right. But I felt very safe. They've been doing it a long, long time up there. And they were very comfortable with how the kidney looked. And everything went very well. So I just, prayed and
hoped
for the best.
You go up. Give me the logistics. Do you drive up, bus up?
No. In fact, that's why how simple it was. I was able to get to a bus into town. And from Conwy Station, train up to the Belfast. And then from the station, you're allowed to go free to another station, 2 stops down on another train. And then it's only a 5-minute walk from the train station to the clinic.
Yeah.
So it's very simple to do. And so I had 6 visits up and down the hospital. First of all, they want to make sure that you're of sound mind and you want to do it and you're motivated. And then you meet...
Michelle, who does that interview?
The coordinator up in Belfast.
Okay, is that a psychologist or...?
No, now they did talk about me seeing a psychologist, but they hadn't been doing that for a while, and then they were quite happy that I didn't need to.
So they went through... How long did that process take?
That's only like an hour's chat,
okay,
really.
And they get a sense from you.
Yes, where I'm coming from.
And do they ask about next of kin?
Yes. And took next of kin details and made sure that you have backup support, like so that my 2 sisters were able to feed me and my friend stayed in the house. He looked after me.
But Michelle, did they say, did you need the affirmation of your next of kin?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. And then you go up and you talk to the consultant nephrologist, and you go to another day, you meet the consultant that's going to do the procedure. Oh, and there's another day before that, you do a whole day. They put you up in a hotel the night before, and then you do a whole day of tests. And they're very well organised, bringing you from one space to the other to get everything checked up. And then another day, so in total 6 visits.
And were the tests intrusive?
Like blood tests and scans and stuff.
Okay.
And then another test was, then they bring you up, once they found the match, they brought me up to do another test to make sure that the two of us were compatible. So at least it meant they had a good chance that it was going to work when the person got the kidney. And then there was another visit where I had to go up. When I went to the consultant, I also had to see an educator who goes through all the risks with you as well.
And what are the risks? Well, apart from you might die, 1 in 3,000.
Exactly, yeah, you might die.
By the way, I want to, and you do, there's a reason you want to encourage people, so do I.
So we're not going to dwell on that part.
Yeah, and as I say, when I went under a general anaesthetic for something completely different, by having the leg broken in 2 places, he said the same to me, but that's the general anaesthetic. So,
and there's a risk with general anaesthetic anyway.
But they're brilliant. They're brilliant. Okay, so so you get the bus from Lucan into town.
Yeah.
With your 2 kidneys.
You get on
the train.
Yeah.
You go to Amos Street. You get on the train up to Connolly, up to Belfast. If you had met anyone you knew on the train, would you have told them what you were going to Belfast for?
I didn't really. I did. One day I did meet somebody and we had a chat and I said what I was doing. And it turned out that he had kidney problems. You hear about people only afterwards.
Wow. Yeah.
When you bring it up yourself, you discover people have lived with one kidney and they know someone who donated a kidney. But really only afterwards did I start telling people, because I was afraid it wouldn't happen. I didn't even tell family till it was, about a couple of weeks beforehand. Just to be sure it wasn't all a wasted effort, that it wasn't going to go ahead.
I understand that, because it might never happen, you were saying to yourself.
Yeah.
But did you not tell family because some people might have said, hang on a minute, Michelle?
Well, I know, but I told them because I didn't want to tell one and not the other. So I told them all. And
so you get off the train, you see the hospital in front of you, City Hospital, it's a modern hospital. And you again, tell me, what was going through your...
I was excited more than anything, that it was fine, that it was going to happen. Excited all the way through the procedures, because it was like a little adventure. And I hadn't been in Belfast before. I didn't see much of Belfast.
You'd never been to Belfast before?
No, and I didn't see it at all, only for the one day that I went to the hotel and then had to go in the morning to go back to the hospital. I just went straight train, hospital, hospital, train, back home. Like, that was it.
So part of you was walking around Belfast as we speak.
Oh, yes.
You think? Yes, okay.
It could be England. I think it might have gone to England.
Great, yeah. Okay. So walking around Newcastle or Liverpool or whatever at the minute. But at any stage did they say to you, now, Michelle, you can pull out?
All the way through I could have pulled out, yeah. And they made that quite clear.
Okay,
but
so
they were very supportive.
So you wake up on the morning, I don't know whether you slept or not, but did you sleep the night before?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was delighted, really excited that it was happening. And, it didn't really worry that, like, what else? There was going to be a few wounds. There was a lot of bruising because I bruise easily. And then after that, it didn't matter. And then all they did was feed me with painkillers and just to be sure that I wouldn't be in pain. And you couldn't, if you coughed, like, it hurt. But that's just because you have a wound.
And when you woke up after the anaesthetic?
Yeah, grand. Just pain because of coughing and the trapped air. You get trapped air because they've had to swell your stomach to help with the operation. And then when they release the air, sometimes it travels up to your shoulders. And they had warned me. Once they had warned me about everything, and they did, that could happen. And if it happened, then I didn't mind because I knew what to expect.
Okay. And I know women have a higher threshold of pain generally than men. But have you a high threshold of pain?
Fairly. And I have a good immune system. I seem to recover from colds and stuff quickly.
Well, hang on. What about, were you worried about COVID? You getting it beforehand?
Yes. Oh, so worried about getting COVID beforehand. I didn't go to anything, family, parties or anything. I didn't. I sort of attended with a mask and left. Didn't want to go anywhere where I'd have to eat with anybody, so that I wouldn't get it. I wanted a minded kidney.
Incredible.
And then, it was grand. It suited me fine.
And what language do you use? I was thinking sacrifice, but you haven't. What?
No, donation.
A donation. A simple donation. But you see it in the same sequence as a blood donation.
Because I couldn't do that. So, yes, that was what I could do. And it gives me pleasure to give away things.
Like. You're a giver.
Yeah, I suppose,
And how long were you kept in hospital for?
I went in on a Monday night for the procedure on the Tuesday, and then they let me stay for as long as I needed. And because I was tired, that is what happens after the operation, I was allowed to stay an extra day. So I stayed till Saturday because I wanted to go back on the train. I didn't want someone coming up and then going back down, bringing me, collecting me and going all the way back down to Lucan. So I did the train journey back. But the train, I got myself minded all the way, and the people in the train station took my bag and walked with me to the train, and they were brilliant.
And so I presume you can't lift much for the first few
weeks.
That's
right. They said I could only lift the weight of a kettle for 8 weeks. But then my friend got COVID after 4 weeks and minded me. So I had to go back to doing a bit more cooking. And then I got COVID within a week of him. So 5 weeks after the operation, I got COVID for 2 weeks. But I was just thrilled I didn't get it beforehand.
Okay,
I didn't mind
that. How did the COVID hit you?
Grand. Just tiredness, thank God, and a cough. So I was very lucky.
I'm talking to Michelle McGowan, who's contacted us trying to encourage people. Well, first of all, everyone in Ireland, if you have a driving licence, please tick the box. Donate. If you haven't got an organ donor card, text the word donor now to, it's a 5500, I think it's 505000. And they just text the word donor and then they send you back the details. Grania Moulds, Grania, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Tell us about this woman, your sister.
Well, the researcher asked, was I surprised? And no, because you described her as a giver, and that's what she is in everything that she does. So no surprise. Was I happy? No, I wasn't. Okay. I was worried. But not sorry now. I think it's great.
And when did Michelle tell you, Grania, that she was going to donate?
I was probably one of the first that she told, because she knew I'd be more accepting than maybe others. But
And what were you worried about?
Well, I was worried that she'd be one of the 3,000, though I didn't know that until she just said it on the radio. I didn't know you were going to ring her on you. But that's just the way she is. And I mean, our big worry was that if she needed a kidney in the future.
Okay.
But I did say I wouldn't see her stuck. But I would. Okay. I mean, if I was going to give a kidney, it would only be to a friend or a relation. I wouldn't give
would
it
not? No.
altruistically, like she did.
And why, when you say Michelle is a giver, what is that? You I presume you grew up with her, and was she always this way?
Always. Like, like there's six in our family, six children, and Michelle was the eldest. But she'd be like, when we'd all be looking for the nicest bun to take or whatever it'd be, she'd wait till the end.
Oh my
God. She's not an Egypt, but yeah, that's the way she was.
But you know, especially if you're close in age, the row, the fights on a Saturday night when you discover, or Michelle discovers, that you're wearing her new jumper or new blouse or whatever.
Oh, that really wasn't a thing, but you could be sure that if it was, she'd have offered it to you, or she'd have bought you one. If she thought it was something that you really wanted, she'd buy you one.
And did your parents, did they recognise this altruism in their eldest?
Oh, absolutely. We all do. She's very special. She's one in a million.
And did anyone say, your mother or your father, various voices, John O'Casey, did they say, oh, you're like your mother, you're like your father, or you're like your Auntie Mary or your Uncle Paddy or your great-grandfather? Where did this innate altruism, this deep, deep altruism that leads somebody to actually donate, to give a kidney to a complete stranger, to leave the country, and politically and geographically, but to go to another jurisdiction?
I don't know where. I mean, as I said, there's six children in the family. She's the only one who would do it.
Siobhan would.
One in a million.
Well, Siobhan, now, Michelle, don't start putting people's names down without asking.
No, she said Siobhan had been thinking about it, and she said she would. She'd be interested in doing it.
Siobhan has probably fallen off her office chair or whatever she is at the minute. Stay with us. Dominic Purcell has contacted us, as Grania has it. Michelle has an 0818 715815. Dominic, you're listening to Michelle McGowan.
Yes, Joe, and I think it's fantastic to hear somebody like that that can are offering to make a huge difference. I won't be able to get a transplant anymore. I've been on dialysis 8 years. But it's fantastic to hear somebody like that willing to offer a chance. It's a huge chance of a lifetime. I had a kidney transplant in 1991, and it lasted about 20 years, and it made such a difference.
Ah, lovely.
Yeah.
So it's very brave of her, but it's so humble and fantastic for somebody like that to be able to give somebody else another chance.
And did you know, Dominic, I don't know whether you're ringing from the Republic, so to speak, but did you know that in the Republic you cannot, even after all the medical suitability tests are done, you cannot give your kidney to someone who is a stranger?
No, that's news to me, and it's great news. It's bad news. Hopefully that will change over time. Hopefully as a result of this, maybe things will change, you know?
That's hoping. Yeah, that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Spreading the word.
And
kidney transplants are way down from before as a result of the pandemic, but anything that will help change a life is always helpful, you know.
And did when you had your transplant, Dominic, back in 1991, 31 years ago, was that someone, a relative, do you mind me asking, or a friend? Or
no, it was tragically from an accident.
An organ donation.
And my children were very young at the time, so it meant that I had 20 years of their upbringing. It's such a huge difference. It really does make a difference. So please, and that card,
Text a word donor to 550. Text a word, obviously not if you're driving, but text a word donor. Simple as that. D-O-N-O-R to 550, and that's you then get.
It makes such a huge difference. It really does, And I'm not belittling it. It's a huge give for anybody to offer. And it's very hard on the families as well.
And Dominic, I'm sorry that you're in this situation in at the minute where you can't have, you're not eligible for another transplant. Is that to do with age, Dominic, or medical?
No, just a medical condition that came along, yeah.
Now, on the one hand, I'm kind of blown over by Michelle, but on the other hand, she's resisting all this. Am I overstating her generosity?
No, absolutely not. It's a huge gift to give to anybody.
Okay, Dominic, stay as well as you can, and thank you so much for
contacting us.
And thank you so much for reminding people. If you free text the word donor to 550, that gets us on the list. Fintan Bright, Fintan, you're listening to Michelle McGowan, who's donated her kidney 8 weeks ago tomorrow to a stranger, and she had to leave the country to do it, so to speak. She had to go to Belfast because we don't do it in the Irish jurisdiction. Fintan, your point, please.
I can certainly know where she's coming from. I donated a kidney to my son in Vienna in 2016.
Okay.
He had kidney failure, and I didn't think twice about it. I thought it was the best thing to do. I'd seen him suffering a lot on dialysis, and he was on a home dialysis, and it didn't work for him, unfortunately. It worked for some people, but it didn't work for him. And he was living in Vienna, and I was back and forward to Vienna quite a lot.
Okay.
And so I decided I would give him a kidney, and I spent a week in the hospital then in Vienna. We'd done about 12 or 13 tests in the week, and after each test, I was handed a result. And on the Friday night of that week, I was told, yeah, everything's good, you're good to go. We had done a cross-match test about a month beforehand, and it was 100%. So we done it on the 16th of March 2016, or the 15th of March 2016.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe the difference it made to him the morning of the operation, after I came back and he came back, and he had just gone to the toilet for the first time in 4 years. So it was a great thing to do. But I would highly recommend it to anybody that has somebody in the family has kidney trouble. Get tested. You will. It's not a hard operation as it was. They can do it now with keyhole surgery, which was done with me. And it's a great thing to do. And you'll see the results in front of your eyes,
Incredible. And how's your boy now, Fintan?
Oh, he's fine. He's living in Vienna now. He's coming home now for my other son, Ian. He's getting married at the end of the month, and he's coming home. He's the best man for that.
Great.
He's great.
Oh, congratulations.
He never looked back.
Well done. And how have you been in the long term?
I've been fine.
Now, six years.
I'm okay. I'm grand. I'm aches and pains, but that goes with the surgery, I suppose. I'm 72 now, so I'm in that.
You're still young and healthy.
Well done,
Fintan. That's Fintan Bright, which Fintan's surname describes the response we're getting to Michelle McGowan, who's telling us that she 8 weeks ago tomorrow. Now, by the way, she's not boasting, as you can hear from her tone and her timbre and her tenor. She's actually just trying to encourage other people, one, to get a donor card if you're in this jurisdiction, but two, to actually consider if that's what you want, to leave the jurisdiction and give a kidney to a stranger. But you're saving, and you're chidley, you heard Fintan there, you're changing the life so dramatically, so I won't say simply, but so quickly. Of a stranger. Back after this break. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Trish Boyce is in Wexford and she's listening to Michelle. Trish, good afternoon. Your situation, again, you're not disconnected to what Michelle has done.
No, absolutely not. I think she's just phenomenal. It's fantastic. Mm. It's just fantastic. But I suppose my situation at the moment is I'm actually waiting to go up for my medical assessment now in a couple of weeks to Beaumont. I've been told I'm a match to hopefully, fingers, toes, everything crossed, to be able to give a kidney to my dad. Ah. My dad, John, who is currently on dialysis. So, yeah, that's my situation at the moment. But like Michelle, and, you know, I feel the very, very same. She's such a positive person, and I'm kind of looking forward to this, you know, and the surgery, I know, will be very heavy, but the amount of support that I've got already from family and friends saying, you know, after the surgery, I will do this for you. I will help you do whatever to get you through this. But and only there, just actually this morning, somebody said to me in work, have you any holidays planned this year? And I said, well, no, I haven't at the moment, but I might be able to give the gift of life back to somebody. And that's my dad. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Good luck.
And Trish, would you like to ask, given that Michelle has just gone through the operation that you're about to go through, fingers crossed, as you say, for your dad, and would you like to ask Michelle any questions?
I suppose, like, did she kind of have any second thoughts, maybe any way close to the surgery, or how did she feel afterwards? You know, did she feel a sense of, I suppose, maybe relief, or was it, what kind of, emotion did she feel after it?
No, I wasn't a bit afraid, and I wasn't, there was nothing was going to stop me, so you won't, nothing's going to stop you, and the very best luck given to your dad, it's brilliant. And the recovery time, as you say, the hospital have it all well organised. You just have to take it easy. And they did warn me about possible tiredness, and you could have a wave of tiredness just come over you, and then you think you're doing great, just be careful you don't do too much, that you could get another wave of tiredness come over you. So milk it for all it's worth, Trish. Enjoy it.
Exactly. Okay. I suppose I've kind of started to prepare in my own mind, you know, should we all love the odd glass of wine, but I just made a decision now, as of from a couple of weeks ago, that I'm just not going to, you know, drink now until after, at least until after the assessment.
Well, maybe it doesn't matter, because certainly afterwards you can have your normal diet, but it mightn't affect you. You might be sacrificing with no reason.
That's true. But I want my body to be in the best condition it can be for the medical alone, you know what I mean? And I have to say, you know, I've only been up a couple of times now to Beaumont, both with my dad and for my own appointments. But the team up there are just phenomenal. Mm. They really, really are. And they're so straight with everything. And at any stage, if you have any questions, ring, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the phone call I got a couple of weeks ago from them to say it was a match. It was just very emotional. But, you know, it's like yourself, Michelle. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. And some people look at me thinking, you know, really? You're going under the knife? I said, but it's going to benefit somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
And benefit my dad,
We're so lucky to be able to have an operation that is doing that. It's not an operation that's taking us out of pain or anything.
Exactly.
It's giving somebody a much better life.
Exactly. And fingers crossed, please God, everything it'll happen, you know.
Please God, we'll be thinking.
Thank you
please
very
God,
much.
Trish, to you and your dad, and you're in great hands up at Beaumont, great hands in our health service. Danielle Walsh. Danielle is listening to Michelle McGowan. Again, not unconnected. Danielle, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. What's your situation?
I've had two kidney transplants. Okay. I'll explain the first one to you. I was diagnosed, I had kidney issues since I was a child.
Okay.
And I was diagnosed with kidney failure. I was sick. I kept getting kidney infections and getting whatever. And at the age of 16, I was diagnosed with, I was brought up to Dublin and a medic consultant. And he had told me that I had, that my kidneys were gone. So he put me straight onto dialysis. And I was very young. I was in the middle of my junior cert year. Now, once I got everything, I was very ill starting off because it took me a while before they put me on the list, because I had to be 100% before they put me on the list. So I went over to Beaumont, over to meet David Hickey, the transplant surgeon, and we had discussed that what would the procedure. So immediately he put me on the transplant.
Okay.
And a couple of months after, I got the call. to say that I was suitable for a kidney transplant, that a donor had come available. And
do you remember that call?
I do, yeah. Well, I don't remember. It was my mum got the call.
Yeah.
So, and I was really nervous, you know, yourself when you're going for it, because you're going under the knife, as that lady said. And I was really nervous, like, but everything went well. It was a success. My transplant was such a success. And I really thank that donor family for giving me, and I'll always remember them, because I got 21 years out of that kidney.
Wow.
And I won't ever forget them. They've given me a great life back. They've given me my youth back, if that's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah.
So, and then I had my second transplant. I was like, that kidney, it was starting to go into failure. It was starting to fail. It was, the creatinine kept going up. The function of the kidney kept going up. And my consultant nephrologist, Professor Colin O'Shea, had said that we have to put you on dialysis. They were trying to prolong the dialysis. But eventually then I had to go back on dialysis. So I was on dialysis for 2.5 years.
Okay.
And I got the call then from Beaumont again to say that there was another kidney available. So I went up. I got the transplant. And it's all doing well. Everything is back on track again. Just once I go up to Beaumont for my mom and my checkups and do what they tell me to do, everything is, you know.
Incredible. And were you aware, Danielle, that strangers cannot, even after all the medical hurdles, donate a kidney, to just donate a kidney full stop?
It was a strange thing when I was young.
But a friend could, if they're suitable.
My mum had offered to give me her kidney the second time, but because I had higher antibodies, the kidney wasn't. I wouldn't have taken her kidney. Wouldn't have taken into me if we'd had the operation. I wouldn't have taken, because that was the sec. That was my second. That was because of the second transplant, and then we were going to head over to Coventry then. We were on the list for that, and that didn't. Well, it did. We'd done all the tests, and we had done everything, and then I got the call on the Irish list. The Irish list called me for a transplant, so because I was on the list in Ireland.
Incredible.
It is. It's amazing, and it's donors mainly. It's donors, like, you know. It's all down to donors. It's all about donor families and the generosity, and without any of us.
But in Michelle's case, she wasn't asked. She wasn't contacted. She didn't come across it in her own life, thank God.
Yeah.
But she just thought of it, and she said, why can't I give one of my kidneys to a complete stranger? And then Michelle, gone into the sucker, so to speak, of saying, well, I'm not allowed to do it in the Republic. I want to do it. And that could have been the end of it, but you actually pursued it.
Absolutely.
And Michelle, do you I don't want to get into religion or what drives people, but you heard your sister there explain that from the get go, Gran, you said you were always, even though you were the eldest, you were always a giver.
Yeah, and it's just I suppose I'm very grateful that I have more than I need for myself, and so I like to share what I have or to give it away, and other people I feel so fortunate.
Okay.
And,
have you done stuff like this before? I know you do blood donation.
No, but I give away money.
Okay.
When I have savings,
yeah,
I give it away.
Do you?
Because, you know, there are other people that can do with it, and you don't hear about the people, so you have to find someone discreet, like my uncle, who can then put the feelers out and can come back to me and say, "Yeah, such a person would be glad of a bit."
So you wouldn't necessarily go through an organised charity.
Oh, I give to charity. I would have. I've been a volunteer with Sunshine House and Vincent de Paul, and was with them for about 30 years, and then with the Special Olympics as well. And I've done Cub Scouts and Simon Community. So I'd always be inclined to give my time, all right. And
how do you survive? Do you mind me, Michelle? How do you survive financially?
I just don't need much.
No, but do you have paid employment?
Well, they do. I work. They were very good about it. The centre in Lucan. I work in the post office there, and they were very good about that. I might just have to up and go, and at only 3 weeks' notice, which I did. I was only doing part time,
And I worked in the bank for 30 years and I got redundancy. So I was able to give away stuff. Yeah.
And when you were working in the bank, did you become involved? Were you in the social club in the bank? Or
no,
I know some banks.
Not very sociable.
No,
I haven't. That's why I said the family gatherings wasn't a big sacrifice. I'm not great with people. I just like, I'm okay with people when the Marie Keating Foundation as well. I got
great,
involved.
Great organisation. Yeah.
So it's things that I can, where I can serve a purpose. I'm okay with meeting people. I got two dogs now and got them, but didn't know whether I should get them yet because didn't know whether the operation would happen. And then I just said, I shall go for it because anything could happen. The procedure mightn't go ahead.
Yeah. So you got
and
the two dogs.
They get me out and about and meeting people, and that's enough meeting for me.
And Michelle, is it a higher calling?
I don't know. Now, I wasn't going to be a nun. And I think that's more of a sacrifice, giving up your whole life.
Absolutely.
So I haven't got that sort of a calling. It's just, I like to give away things and I like to give away money. It gives me pleasure.
And do you believe in karma, that it comes back?
Well, I think it must, because I've always been fortunate. So karma, yes, I do believe in it. But I had it. Like, I've just been lucky and fortunate all the time. So it's an easy thing to share it. That's what I believe in.
Okay.
Share what you've got. And some people have a tough life. And another, if I have money sitting there and other people could do with a bit of a dig out, why not? Mm. And you're helping them achieve. Like, I wouldn't be interested in going on big holidays and stuff. If my nieces and nephews will go on the holidays, I'm delighted. And cousins and stuff, they can achieve things before, that they couldn't have done without money.
And how do you spend, what gives you a joy, pleasure, fulfilment? Obviously, this altruism does, but
that's it. Or I've a friend has a place in Tipperary now, gardening, rough gardening. I like that, and walking the dogs. I can't. If everyone should have a dog and get them from Dogs Trust or a shelter, like they're just brilliant. Can't tell you, it makes me so happy, my two dogs.
And you mentioned earlier that you didn't have direct, you've got obviously an extraordinarily loving family, birth family, but you don't have children yourself.
Not married. Yeah.
And do you think you would have met resistance there?
I probably wouldn't have offered it, because if you've got children, you'd be afraid that they might need it. They might need your kidney.
Okay.
So, and that's why my sister was very surprised at doing it. But she'd be coming from a place where a different sister, where she, and Gronje as well, she's got children, and they might need it. Or a grandchild, if there ever's to be one. Whereas I wasn't going to hold on to my kidney on the chance that they might need it.
Yeah.
My sisters might need it. And they mightn't even match. But I was also fortunate, I'm O negative. So that blood group can be used for anybody in an emergency. So
I'm just wondering, Michelle, we'll try and tease it a little bit. If you had a partner, formally, so to speak, in terms of legally, male or female, could that partner veto?
Oh, I suppose. But who's going to do it without their partner's okay?
Okay. Stay with us. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We'll finish this section because we're talking to Michelle McGowan, who contacted us. Finish it by reminding people, please, in the South, anyway, text the word donor to 5500, and then they send you back how you can register as a donor or take your driver license. And remember to say it to some member of your family, even in conversation. And you say, as I heard that woman, if you're lucky enough to have heard Michelle on Liveline, and if ever I can become a donor, can't do it down south to a stranger, but if God forbid anything ever happens to me, please have no hesitation if that's available to be given. Will is in Cork listening to Michelle. Will.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
Good. Your story, please.
Basically, my story is the start of this year, I had a kidney and pancreas transplant.
Okay.
So
That's it. Is that as big as it sounds?
Big surgery. Okay. I'm flying after it now, to be honest.
Great.
I was a diabetic for 27 years. I'm 41 now, but my diabetes is gone. I have a normal life again. My kidney is functioning. Luckily, I hadn't started dialysis. I was about to. And I got the call to get up to St. Vincent's because they had matches for me. So I had a double transplant in. And since then, I see a future in my life. You know, it's I'm always a very positive person anyway. But I actually see a future. You know, it's amazing. Like my sister wanted to go, my sister Rona, she wants to go as a to get tested to be a kidney donor for me. But since I was going for a kidney and pancreas, my best option would have been from a deceased person. Yeah. So I feel I owe my life to that family, and I'm going to be able to write to them anonymously at some stage. And it's something I just can't wait to do, to let them know how their loved one is after.
So the difference it made to you, I know it's a few months ago, but the difference it has made so far?
I feel so much better in myself. Now, there was a few hiccups and stuff like that at the start, and like the whole transplanting went very smoothly, but little infections afterwards and things like that. But other than that, in Vincent's, they were absolutely fantastic to me. My surgeon, Tom Gallagher, an amazing man. And then there was the transplant coordinators, Susie and Caroline. They were absolutely fantastic to me. I owe my life to them as well. Like, it's just, like, since it was a double transplant and the pancreas and things like that, it's done in the people from Beaumont to come over to Vincent's, and they do the surgery in Vincent's.
How long were you under? How long was the operation?
About 11 hours. Whatever day I got the call, it was about 5:30 in the evening, telling me to get myself to Dublin. So I packed the suitcase fast, got on the train, and I was in Dublin that night for 9:30, at the hospital for about 10, and they were retrieving the organs from the donor and to test them. And then I got a phone, or then they came in about 5:00 in the morning saying, yeah, the organs are good, you're going down at 7:00 in the morning. So literally it just happened all so fast, because I could get a call saying, come to Dublin and we could have organs, but then the organs might be a match. So I wasn't expecting it to happen so fast. I just thought, right, this is the first test run that I'm going to get. Do you know?
Yeah.
Like, I only spent 13 days in hospital after the transplant. I was up and walking about the day after the transplant.
Incredible. What would you like to say to Michelle, Will?
Michelle, I think it's amazing. I only picked up half your conversation because I was actually in a hospital appointment in Cork. So, normal checkups for it. But I just turned on the radio and I got mainly the end of it. But what you're doing for someone is unbelievable. It's like, I find all of it so emotional lately of what people are doing for other people. Like, as I was saying, my sister wants to go for a donor for me as well. And there's ways in about it. Like, if she wasn't a match for me, that she could have been a match for another person.
Yeah.
And then sure, they would have had a kidney donor. Say, you could have been a match for me then, Michelle.
Yeah.
Do you know? So they would have swapped, given the kidney to someone else. My sister's kidney could have went to someone else, and your kidney could have came to me.
Yeah.
That kind of a way. But I think it's just a selfless act that you're doing, and I have so much respect for what you're
brilliant.
Doing.
Brilliant. The recovery is brilliant to hear the difference it made for you, thank God.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know myself. As I said, I'm always a very positive person, right? But inside, I was always bitter. But I never showed it, you know.
Bitter about what?
Bitter that I got the raw deal of a lot of illnesses and stuff to do with the diabetes and the kidneys, and it was always hospitals and things like that, you know. Like, I wasn't begrudging other people, but I just wanted a break. And I never seen the future for myself. I'd never, I'm 41. I got a mortgage when I was 20. You know, I was always well motivated. But like, the thing is, I never could see myself how long I was going to live or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I actually see a future for myself now. And I'm literally, I smile inside and I'm smiling outside.
Yeah, can hear
and,
it.
And I work now. I'm been off work now over 2 years, but I work for. I think it was it yourself saying you work for Centra or was it the other lady?
Yeah, but no, I, me I work, Centra in the. Yeah.
Well, I work for Super Value in Mallow. Dano Centra in Super Value in Mallow, and they've been absolutely amazing to me. Like they're, my job is there for me. Whenever
Brilliant.
I can go back, like
Brilliant.
So, my plan is to get back. No, I've been off over 2 years, but they know my situation. They know I'm a genuine person. And when COVID came about, I had to take time off because my kidney function was gone down to 24%, and before I had the transplant, I was down to 10%. So, they had just been absolutely fantastic. I'm telling you, I can't wait to get back working there because.
I'm sure.
It's just a fan. They're just a great bunch to work
well
for.
Done.
The
most well
great
done.
Group, I find.
Just take it easy. Do it slowly.
Well, that's it. Like my plan is, I'm hoping to get back for September because I need to get my immune system is still very low. So I'm getting myself built up. But they have no qualms about it. No questions. No,
Brilliant.
They haven't hassled me or anything, saying, "Oh, we can't keep your job open."
Brilliant.
You know, I just find them brilliant. Like.
Okay. And in your case, Michelle, what about, did you lose money through work? Or?
Well, in fact, the NHS, I have a pension from the bank as well.
Okay.
But the NHS would cover expenses and lost wages if I wanted.
Okay.
So it is,
and let me
you
guess,
know, it really
let me
no
guess,
cost.
Let me guess, you didn't claim.
No, because I figured they're probably in the same situation as Dublin or the south of Ireland, the money situation.
And have you
poor.
Any idea who got your kidney?
No, not yet. I'm hoping they say that, like Will said, he can write a letter. They are allowed, the recipient is allowed. I just want to hear that they are still doing okay at this stage, even 6 weeks later or 8 weeks later, that they've. But at least I know that 7 days later they were okay. It was still going. So I'd love to know. But it's great to hear about Will that he was in such a bad way that the difference it makes. It's terrific.
But now that we're talking about life and you giving life, do you believe in the afterlife, Michelle?
Yes. But I'm not that bothered. You just have to like do the right thing while you're on. When you're down here, do the right thing and look after people if you can and stuff like that.
But my point is, you're doing it for the here and now. You're not doing it to get in through the pearly gates.
Oh no, no. But I think everyone will get in.
Yes,
I don't think God is fussy.
Yes.
I do believe that there is somewhere to go and that He'll take everybody, whether you do good things or not.
And who do you admire as an altruist? Who do you say insofar as you do, could be a friend, it could be a world figure, it could be a frontline. Who do you admire as an altruist?
Well, people like John Hume.
Yeah.
I think that people who give off their own time and put in all that effort and take risks, personal risks, with their own lives and his wife and family. Those type of people, I think they're putting it into action, what they're doing for people and looking at helping people, that type of thing. Charlie Bird, that he's putting aside his problems and
Incredible.
Walking mountains and raising money and raising awareness, that type of person, I think I have admiration for them.
But like sometimes, I'm thinking of John Hume, sometimes there is like you said, and I know in one sense it's trite, but you saw the assembly elections up north, the results of the weekend, where the SDLP, John Hume's party, and John Hume, as you know, took all those risks for peace and got abused in the media, especially here in the South, when he tried to persuade Sinn Féin IRA to give up violence, and he was successful, as you know, in the end. But he didn't benefit from it. His party didn't benefit from it.
No, no.
And there's a famous quote by Tony Blair during the Good Friday Agreement negotiations, where Seamus Mallon and John Mann, the likes of Mark Durkin, were negotiating, and they said to, because the figures would have been different then in terms of representation in favour of the SDLP, by the way.
Yeah.
And one of them said, "But Tony, you're not taking the SDLP into account." And Tony Blair turned around and says, "But Seamus and John and Mark, you don't have guns to give up." So sometimes good people like John Hume, now I know he's dearly loved and Pat was dearly loved, God rest her as well, but sometimes you don't get the reward for being good.
No, and things get forgotten, but you know, people's efforts get forgotten very easily, I know. It's an awful shame. Okay. But then other people just have to keep remembering them, I suppose.
Now, I know the reaction. Well, maybe I don't know the reaction I'm going to get. I'm looking at a list of things that have come in, people in on, and love to see a photograph of you and all this carry on. But people saying, hotels, would Michelle and Rania or whoever like to come and stay for a weekend with us? Would I pick one for you, or would you?
Oh, God. I don't expect people to do that.
Okay, well, I'm just going to pick one at random here. I have a breakaway for Michelle and her sister in Harvey's Point in Donegal.
Jeepers, that's some journey. But I've heard of it. I've heard it's lovely.
Will you go?
Thank you so much.
Okay, you go. Okay.
Thank you so much.
I just didn't know how you'd react. Okay.
Oh, sure, I'll go anywhere. But we'll see. We'll talk about the dogs afterwards.
Oh, the dogs,
They're two flipping big lurchers.
Oh, are they? Wow.
Well, you know, we'll work that out.
Lurchers or Rhodesian?
They're lurchers. They have a lot of greyhound in them.
Okay.
So that makes them taller. But I'd highly recommend lurchers to people.
Okay, because I know Pat Kenny has two. I think they're Rhodesian Ridgebacks, but they're big dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going to say, Pat will mind your dogs for the weekend.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thanks, Pat.
Okay, Michelle, I cannot express the joy you've brought to people on this awful day, because on the one hand, you're talking, and on the other hand, the images of the four screens that are in my... There's four, five, six, seven, eight. One of them I can't see, thank God. There's eight screens in this studio here, and it's all doom and gloom and Putin saying this war will go on forever, basically. That's what he said today. It's akin to him, to the Second World, lunatic stuff. But and then you see the images of the people. To compare and contrast. And then he's parading these incredible weapons of death through and boasting about them. And you see how you treasure life and life for others. It's an incredible juxtaposition. Michelle McGowan, Gura Míle Maith Agat, Michelle. And
thank you very much.
Fall, and,
lovely to talk to you.
Likewise. Privilege.
Thank you. Take care.
Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And text the word donor to 550. To get your organ donor card. We were due to talk to Alex on late last week, because he contacted us after Seamus O'Brien contacted us from Waterford. He's working with Ukrainian refugees, and they were very upset about a rally due to be held yesterday, and it did go ahead in some shape or form to celebrate Victory Day, as they call it, in Russia. And as you know, they're celebrating it actually today in Red Square, and by the way, 28 other cities throughout Russia, to mark the end of their victory in the Second World War. But it's being used by Putin as a propaganda exercise to say he will annihilate us all if we don't fall under his jackboot. Alex, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Joe.
How did yesterday go?
It's actually good, I would say, you know, because it's good people has attended, and it was nice and peaceful, and I think we've managed to show, you know, kind of our support, like, you know, to kind of every nation, like, you know, who was involved in this war. So in my opinion, it is a lot of misunderstanding at the moment, especially on Irish news, you know, that we're actually supporting the war in Ukraine, which we're actually not, you know. We're a completely multinational society, which is all the people from like regions like Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Moldova, Poland, you know, Slovakia. And just basically what's all uniting us, that we actually, we speak Russian. Obviously, not for every person it's a main language, but, you know, the people do speak language, you know.
And what was their speech? I know you had it in the Apple Green in Enfield, was it in the big?
Yeah. See, we moved it away from Dublin. Like, I reached, see, every, this event is actually held in Ireland for over 10 years, you know.
Okay.
And it's not just new, you know, it's been held for over 10 years here. And always, like, it's around between 2,500 to 3,000 people actually attending. It's from all the different, you know, I would say 15 different countries. And this year, obviously, we have decided not to do it at all. But it's just the people actually from our community that was asking to organize at least, you know, a small peaceful convoy for us, because that's their tradition, like, you know.
A small peaceful convoy. And yeah. So the numbers were down dramatically. Why was that?
It's basically just the people. First of all, it's all the threats on the social media that actually was put up towards us. Because
What were the threats, Alex?
Oh, Jesus. We even reported to Gardaí a lot. Like, you know, we was, see, people were threatening us to throw from the bridges the cocktails of Molotovs and stuff. Which
People said they would throw petrol bombs at you from...
Yes, absolutely. And when we actually was driving on the M6, the guard was, you know, they was actually on every bridge. They was literally patrolling every bridge that we was passing.
There was people protesting.
No. There was, like I was trying to say, like it's actually police was patrolling every bridge, make sure
they
prevent anything. Yes, absolutely. They was actually escorting us all the way down from all the way to Athlone from the Antilles.
Okay.
And they was like putting the police patrols like on every bridge that we was passing. See, from our perspective, what I'm trying to explain is that this is nothing to do with Russia. Like, you know, this celebration, it's not Russian. Like, you know, it's a multinational. It's it was yesterday celebrated in Britain. It was celebrated in France. It was celebrated in many European countries as a end of the World War II, you know. I don't understand, like, why is it just being presented on, especially in the Irish media at the moment.
Well, you'll see it. I don't know, but did you hear what Vladimir Putin said this morning at the Victory Day parade, which in their case happens today in Moscow?
No, I actually haven't seen the news today.
Well, he basically said that he doesn't even have the good grace to call it an invasion of Ukraine. He says they had to invade Ukraine basically before Ukraine invaded us.
Okay, that's, you know, I can't comment his statements, like, you know.
Yeah, well, what do you think of it? He said the West was preparing for the invasion of our land. Where's the evidence of that? Do you believe that?
See, I don't know. Honestly, I don't really follow, like, you know, his statements and stuff, because I'm not originally from Russia at all. I'm, you know, from Baltic countries. And, like, we have our own things, we have our own tradition, you know. My granddad, for example, started the war from Lithuania, you know, and I have no relation to Russia at all, like, you know.
Okay, and well, your country was after.
It was part of the Soviet Union.
Yeah,
exactly.
against your will. And the moment you got your independence and you saw the chance of independence in 1991, everyone took it. But I'm thinking about 1991, but. Your family back in... Are you Latvia or Lithuania, Alex?
From Latvia, yeah.
But I'm
mixed. I'm half Latvian, half Lithuanian, you know. Because my granddad, he was from Lithuania, and my, you know, other parents...
But Latvia, Lithuania and Estonia, they've all joined...
They all joined the European Union, of course. Yeah.
And they've all joined NATO.
Yes, they did, yeah, absolutely.
And what do you think of that?
This is my point. It is, like, you know, it's a lot of people, they might disagree with political view of their leaders in the country, you know. And it's like, if we grew up, and I say, for instance, I remember this the Victory Day since I was a child, you know. And this is just a honor. I attend there personally just to honor my granddad, you know. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to do with politicians, you know, or anything like that. I'm against any military action, any part of the world would be, you know, personally. I would never support any war in any part of the world. It doesn't matter if it's Afghanistan, it's Ukraine, it's Syria, or anything.
Okay. Nick Kozlov, you're listening to Alex. Nick, good afternoon. I did you hear what Putin had to say today, Nick?
Yes, Joe, I've heard it, and I'm listening to Alex. And my issue with that would be, well, my granddad as well was in the Second World War. But in 8th or 9th of May, by the way, it's not the end of the Second World War. Second World War finished in the 2nd of September, 1945.
Okay.
That was the end of the war between Soviet Union and Germany. So, and my issue with that, it's the name of it. It's a celebration of the victory. All over the world, that day is a day of remembrance and reconciliation. It's not a parade, which was being portrayed since. That parade was cancelled after the Second World War finished in Soviet Union. Okay. It only reimbursed in 1965 because Stalin cancelled that because he, the memory of the horror of the war and the killing and losses of that war, he was afraid of that. And he didn't consider that a big win because he wanted to invade whole of Europe. However,
So Nick, what do you think of what Alex did yesterday and what Alex helped organize?
Well, what Alex did, they are parading. So they are glorifying winning of the war and the sign, they're displaying the red flags as I've seen from the picture. Under that red flag, Russian army now killing Ukrainians in Ukraine. And they call us the fascists and Nazis as well. So I, if he has to honor his granddad as I would like to honor mine,
mm-hmm.
my granddad never go to parade. He never spoke about the war. On that day, he would have his 100 grams of, we call it, penalty drink. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see the glorification of that become more apparent when the Putin came to the things. Why does the Alex does not take two, for example, red carnation flowers that would represent in our things and do not go and just put them to the victim of the war somewhere in Dublin. That would be an honor for his granddad. But no, cavalcade of the cars displaying red flags, which used to represent a red army. And now even the Russian propaganda used the old granny with the red flag, kind of, as a...
Yeah, the photo... Nick has a point. The photographs... The photographs are quite aggressive. Are they from yesterday's fellas, bare-chested fellas best dressed in khaki or uniform, wearing Russian-style army hats? What's all that about?
That's what I'm saying. That's the people tradition was since they were the children, like, you know. And guys, you're missing the point. You might see it on the picture, just the red flags, but you're missing the point, like, out of the rest.
Well, was there any Ukrainian flag in the cavalcade?
It was actually, it was Ukrainian flags there as well, and it was the Ukrainian people who attended this event, you know. And it's the people actually from different parts of Ukraine come over. It actually was a, it's a good few attendants from the Kyiv region, and it was another people from actually, they are the site of the war at the moment. And they was peacefully together there, and they had no issues. This is what I'm trying to say, is like, you know, a lot of people using this as a propaganda from both sides, you know, from other Russians, you know, or even from the Western side.
Yeah, but on, see, do you still believe it's this is about two sides?
Joe, can I ask
no,
you?
No, what I'm trying to say, they use them as a propaganda from two sides. No, you're missing my point, John. Sorry for pushing you there. They're actually using as a propaganda from two sides. One side trying to glorify themselves, another side actually...
Okay, but anyone at the rally yesterday in the speech or whatever condemn Vladimir Putin and what he's doing to Ukraine?
No, not at all. Not at all, absolutely. We had it actually pressed there. They took an interview from different people, and I haven't seen any person who would actually say that they would support Putin there.
No, did anyone condemn Putin?
What do you mean condemned?
Did anyone stand up yesterday and say, I just want to make clear this demonstration, it's as Nick correctly pointed out, it's not to mark the end of the Second World War. It was to mark the victory of the Soviet forces, so to speak.
No, not at all.
The question, did anyone stand up and say, we do not agree with what Vladimir Putin has been doing in Ukraine for the last 70 days?
Yes, yes, and the actual people gave actually interview to reporters, and they clearly said that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Nick.
Yeah, well,
can I ask Alex, was there any signs that OV display in the parade?
Not at all. That was a very strict rule, actually, of not displaying any images or symbols like that, because we would be against,
Sorry, Anne.
Well, that's Joe, that's what you're saying. You see, I don't know, was it any interview in it, but Alex even couldn't give his own opinion on what Mr. Putin says. And it's very convenient for him not to be political. However, cavalcade of the red flags going through the M6, that's a displaying of the celebration. That's not the Remembrance Day. The night of May should be day of mourning for that amount of people that have been lost on our side, rather than parade. Like, imagine, Joe, if you try to celebrate losses in the war and independence against the Great Britain, and you do that with the same way as the St. Patrick Parade. How does it look like? That's what to me is representing.
And to call it a victory.
Yes.
But sorry, guys, pushing you there. But why did you
Alex,
say the celebration?
No, if you may, I didn't finish. Yeah. I finished.
Yeah,
you can talk. I didn't cut your thought. So please. Okay, that's what represented to me is the word celebration. It's parade. It's always been called parade. And sometimes the Soviet Union, the same as the 9 of the day of the revolution, the unions will push people because they have to be there. My parents didn't want to be there. And that doesn't mean that everybody has to do everything and everywhere. It's almost 80 years ago. How long are we going to celebrate that? 800 years. Move on. Move to something. That's what my issue is. Remembrance and quiet remembrance for the people who die. Not to put the...
And there was no
the grandfather.
I presume, Alex, yesterday there was no remembrance for the 2 million women raped by the Red Army as they advanced across Poland and Germany.
Actually, remembrance for everybody, it's not just from, of course, there is. This is the guys you're trying to put us, in the terms of the we actually brought us.
So you condemn, you condemn what Putin is doing.
What we actually, just let me say it, what we actually doing is, we actually remembering, we remember British soldiers, we remember French soldiers, any who was involved in that. And it's not a parade. I don't know why you're even calling this word. It's not a parade. If you have a peaceful march of honor, can you call this a parade when the people not dancing, jumping and stuff like that?
So you can
give an example. Just give me one second. The guy gave an example of the Patrick's Day, okay? But it's a peaceful, honor convoy. We don't beep. We don't put loud music or anything. Yes, we
drive through. Yes, you do beep.
Because, when we leave the car park, the people just beep to the reporter, But when the people drove on the streets,
Don't say that you don't beep, because you do beep. We've seen that. It was a beep as glorifying this. So I know how to read your signs, Alex. I've been born in Ukraine, and I lived there
until the Soviet Union collapsed. Absolutely. Everybody have a different view on this. We have a different tradition.
We're not in a debating society in university. People being slaughtered over the last 7 days. Do you condemn but do you condemn what Vladimir Putin and his army are doing at the moment?
I'm disagreeing with that.
Do you condemn it?
I never would support this.
Do you condemn it?
She's a clearly answer, I never would support the war.
You condemn it?
No, he's not saying he's condemning. He's using the deflection. He's disagreeing.
What do you mean I'm using the deflection? I'm just saying
clearly,
I'm not supporting what he does there.
Alex, I'll give you an example. I do condemn what Vladimir Putin does in Ukraine. Can you repeat that, please?
Yes, of course, I would clearly say I condemn that he does it,
Great,
thank
you.
Are you okay with that?
Yes, I'm very okay with it.
What's the translation, Nick?
Yeah.
What did Alex say there in Russian?
Он осуждает действия Владимира Путина в Украине.
And what did he
say?
He said, "I condemn." I take the point. But anyway, stay with us. There's another horrific call after this break from someone who's just escaped from Ukraine. Joe Doherty, Dad.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Sorry, Anna, I'm very apologetic. We've only such a short time. Some of your family have arrived from where, Zoriana, and how are they?
Yes, Joe. My cousin arrived from Bucha. He's had two children.
And how are they?
They're trying to find a way and trying to build a new life here. Yeah.
because Bucha, as you know, was such horrific images. And how did they get here? Was it difficult for them to get here, Zariana?
Yes, it was. They were very lucky to escape at the very start, obviously, you know, but it's very difficult for them as they, you know, witnessed all the images, what is happening, and also the people that they lost, that they have known over the years. So it's trying to accept it and to grieve and process everything that is happening, that it's still very, very painful.
Okay. Unfortunately, I'm out of time, but that says it all. It's still very, very painful what is happening. Elaine Conlon was the BCO. Gar Duffy was in sound. Brenda Dunne, who produced, and Ray Darcy's next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.